Hello, and welcome to AMO Kenzoku, episode 84. We are a group of Bubblegum Crisis Boomer otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any other things that we feel like. The Kenzoki are. Kenzoku are.
Hey, all, I'm Mike.
Hi, I'm Dylan.
Hello, I'm Nick.
And I'm this today's host, Sam. Today, we are going to be talking about, let's see, today we are recording on July 9th, 2026. With that, let's get started. Ashin. So today we're talking about the Japanese film Exit 8. This is a movie that, let's see, it came out in Japan in August of last year, 2025, and it just had its North American release on April 10th of this year, 2026. And it only ran for, I think, a very short period of time at the very, as most, I guess, foreign films, they don't get a whole lot of play in the US, but I was able to see it in theaters, and then I think the rest of you guys streamed it recently. The movie is based on a game called the same title, I believe, and directed by Genki Kawamura, who I'd never heard of. He doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, at least not an English one. I looked around. He's done such stellar films as being a writer on Doraemon, Nobita's Treasure Island, and did the screenplay for Doraemon, the movie Nobita's New Dinosaur. So this guy's really got a bunch of power behind him. The director also contributed to the screenplay. And the game Exit 8 is by Kotake Create. I've never played the game. I guess before we get into the game stuff, who wants to take a stab at a brief description of the plot of the movie? How about Nick? You want to take a swing?
Yeah, sure. So I think it's relatively simple to explain. The movie is about a gentleman who I believe is nameless. I believe he's just referred to as the Lost Man. In the movie and the credits, who is riding a subway train like any other takes place in Japan, and just like any other Japanese commuter, he seems to be on a train. He gets a phone call from his ex, who kind of nervously tells him that she's at the hospital and she just discovered she is pregnant, and it is inferred that it is his child, and she is scared and uncertain of what to do, and he kind of starts to have a panic attack on and tries to figure out, you know, what he wants to do as well. And during that kind of, you know, confusion and stupor, he exits a train and somehow wanders into an infinitely looping corridor of subway exits. And the rest of the movie is him kind of understanding the rules on how to get to exit number 8. He starts at exit 0, and the rules kind of state that there, you know, he needs to observe, look for any anomalies. If he finds any anomalies, he needs to go back. And so the rest of the movie is him kind of, you know, figuring out those rules, encountering other individuals who are also stuck in this infinite loop, and there's a lot of, show don't tell that happens. A lot of things need to be inferred, and I feel like that's probably where a lot of our discussions will happen. But yeah, I think that's about the gist of it. It's, you know, at the core, it's basically about an individual trying to make it to exit 8 through a series of puzzle-like corridors.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I guess I'll just start out asking y'all, like, what did you think? I really enjoyed it, so I'm really curious about what you guys thought.
Yeah, I'll start.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Mike. Since I will say I'm familiar with the game. I never played it, but I watched a whole bunch of Let's Plays on YouTube with it, which I think is a great way to experience it if you aren't into kind of these horror suspense style games. I guess you can almost call it like a liminal space kind of game, and that freaks a lot of people out. So, I've watched quite a few people play it on YouTube, and I was really impressed at how, when I first saw that this game was getting a movie, I'm like, how on earth are they going to make an interesting movie about it? Because the game intrinsically has no plot. It is purely an escape game, really, with some horror, light horror elements and some kind of, surprise elements in it. It's kind of, it does a good job of that. But I was wondering how they would make a movie, let alone an interesting movie out of it. And I think it was adapted really well, where the concept of the game was definitely front and center, but they built really interesting characters into it and kind of did the thing that I think is really interesting, where it chose multiple perspectives of multiple individuals who ultimately all intersect with the main character at some point. And amazing set design. I mean, it looked, not to say that it was a complicated set, but it was very, very accurate to the game, minus specific art assets, some of the poster art was different, but the concept as a whole was, I would say, carried over very accurately. And
I was going to even say that the set was very good, because when I was watching the movie, I actually just assumed they picked a corridor in some subway station. And then I read later that, no, they constructed this thing.
So, to make it, which doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, they did a great job aging that to make it look like an actual subway.
Overall, I was very impressed. I kind of wish the entire movie kept with its practical aesthetic, because there was definitely some pretty awful CGI moments in it. But, I let it slide, like the rats and the tidal wave part. But aside from those specific elements, I thought it was excellent set design. And the main protagonist, actor Ninomiya Kazunari, really, really good job. It's tough to play a character where you are, 90% of the dialogue, and a lot of it is you talking to yourself and mumbling and stuff. It's tough to do, I think, for an actor. And I think he did a really good job. He constantly was, you got this feeling of him just constantly being uncertain and unsettled, and slowly starting to build confidence and, figuring out, trying to keep his wits about him, because he's, dealing with these really extreme emotions of the news being dropped on him that it's inferred he's unemployed, and he's now his ex-girlfriend is pregnant with what's presumed to be his child. That's all a lot of heavy news at once, and suddenly now you're stuck in this weird loop and you have no idea what's going on. He did a really good job. So given all that, was the movie perfect? No, but I think it did execute the concept of the game really beautifully. I can see why this was kind of really highly touted when it came out, because I totally get it now.
What about you, Mike? Did you feel similar?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that it was done with a practical set. Yeah, the couple moments of CG were but there weren't too many of them, so they did what they could, and it wouldn't have probably been realistic for them to do too much interacting with the practical set. I liked the liminal space horror. It kind of reminded me of Backrooms, which blew up this spring, though I don't know much about the lore, but they also introduced some psychological elements for the movie. So,
wait, when you say psychological elements for the movie, do you mean Backrooms?
Backrooms movie, yeah.
Okay.
So, which is interesting because I don't know anything about the original web series for that one, except that it was made in Blender and just in response to, public domain memes on a Chan. So,
I if we have time, I definitely want to compare these two, but they have similarities for sure. What about you, Dylan?
So my internet cut out there for a minute, so I I lost a bit of context, so I'll just cut in with my stuff, which is that I kind of heard of the game, but I hadn't really seen it. And then I just bought it on Switch 2, kind of without really knowing much about it, other than I had heard of it. And I played it a bunch with my wife, and she got tired of it. And then I kept playing and kept playing and kept playing, and eventually I did beat it. And I got to the exit, and I felt very accomplished about myself. And then I saw the movie. Wife watched it too, and she was like, "Oh gosh, I'm not playing that game again." But she did watch the movie. and I, again, I missed some of the commentary there, but I'll say, like, yes, I think they did an excellent job at making it look like a real, like, the set was done super well. I really loved the walking man casting, and the main lost mm-hmm. man. They were cast really, really good. Walking man was probably the best casting. He's so good.
He was really good.
Yeah. Because yeah, when you sure. first see him, he's like, one, it's just like he's there literally doing the walk, which is just hard to do that, like, so repeatedly, like, and yeah. not be distracted or have your eyes veer or anything.
You know that the actor probably stared at the game walk for hours and method acted oh, that man. For probably dozens of more hours to get it down flawlessly with that, you know, obsessive Japanese perfectionism.
Yeah.
Because I completely agree. It's like he was copy pasted from the game into the movie.
Yeah.
It was unsettling how accurate it was between the two.
The wardrobe for him too was like also made him very CG looking. It was great.
Yeah. And just that he comes in and he's like super creepy with the smile, and then when it cuts to his scene, his stuff where he's a human, like, his smile is like super nice and warm, and he's just like trying to be, you know, a good person for the most part. So anyways, I thought overall, I thought they did a really cool job. I liked that it started out in this first person view, which is how the game is done. And then it had a very smooth mm-hmm. transition out of that into more of a third person view, which makes a lot more sense for a film.
It makes for a better movie.
Yeah, it makes for a way better movie.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, are they going to stick in first person the whole time? And they stopped. I was kind of like, oh, okay, thank goodness. Okay, we can have a real movie now.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh no, I don't know if I can handle a whole movie like this. Yeah, and then they switched, and I was really relieved. I forgot about that, actually.
One of the things I will say on the director is that he's a producer as part of the, he's one of the Story Inc. people. And so he's been a producer on Your Name and Weathering With You and stuff that through Story Inc. So definitely had some high level production credits there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I left those out because who knows what a producer does.
Yeah, really, it's so true. It's so hard to say. Sometimes they're deeply involved, and sometimes they're just like, yeah, I don't know, I cut some cash.
Yeah.
So
I did want to say, like, I liked the transition from strictly being about the lost man to then having the kind of seamless backstory of the walking man. I thought, to me, that was one of the things that really elevated this movie to being way more interesting than just like a video game movie.
Completely agree. It built more, I would say, context and history into the, like, that liminal space. And
yeah,
you know, kind of the fact that it existed, you know, before the lost man, and likely will exist, you know, after he exits. But yeah, I completely agree. And I agree with Dylan. I think the walking man's arc was my favorite part of the movie. Again, the casting was immaculate. Excellent actor as well. And the whole integration of him with the child was also really, really interesting.
There's a lot of interesting things to talk about this. I mean, as far as my comparison, because I think we all come in differently, it sounds like that I played the game before seeing the movie. Sounds like Nick had seen the game before. And Sam had, did you, sorry, I might have missed it. Did you have any experience with the game at all or just the movie?
No, I just knew it existed. And for a time, I didn't actually know which one was first.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, I might have missed it. Have you had any experience with the game at all or not?
Nope.
Okay.
No, this was the first I'd heard of it.
See, I think that's kind of interesting there in that you come, like, kind of come from very different experiences of what we're kind of coming in and expecting and whatever there. I did share some screenshots in our channel that I took from the game of similar stuff with some of the posters, and then they did change some of them for the movie. I'm not sure exactly why. Sometimes they just do it just because they think it's for whatever reason it's going to make things be slightly better or make more sense for a script purpose. But I did see at least one of the posters that wasn't in the hallway in the movie. I did spot it out in kind of the human part of the subway. I actually saw that. I saw one of them, at least one of them out there in the human part of the subway when I rewatched it.
Oh. When you say the human part, you mean like at the end when he actually makes the exit?
In the beginning. Before he goes in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
This movie seems like when I got out of that movie, I had a lot of questions and it made me think a lot, which is part of the reason I love it. And it really felt like a movie that would reward repeat viewings. And so, like, I did not catch that, of course, because I'd never played the game. But I think that kind of stuff is really cool about this movie.
Yeah, completely agreed. I think the movie, it was very intentionally built to reach audiences for both people who aren't familiar with the game, but also are familiar with the game. Because, again, having watched, you know, people play the game and seeing some of the pitfalls, and then watching the characters in the movie fall for the same, it kind of, you know, scratched a particular, you know, part of my brain that I didn't know needed stimulation. But yeah, it was really interesting. At some points I was really trying my best to not pause, because I was like, no, I want the experience to be organic and authentic. So I was just trying my hardest to being like, okay, what's wrong with this one? Something has to be wrong. And just, I constantly was looking within the screen. And I thought that was a really, again, very brilliant way to build the concept of the game into the movie and make it feel like interactive for the audience.
So does the game start getting as evil as the movie does once you get to exit 5?
No, because there's not as much of, like, you're always in the first person view. There's no real character, but there are a lot of other crazy, weird anomalies and things that happen. Like there is a, I'll call it a blood tsunami thing that happens. There's weird, like, almost like invisible ghost people that start like chasing after you and stuff.
Does the rats with body parts ever happen? Because I never saw that in the game.
No, that one's not in there. There's definitely some of them are similar and interestingly adapted, and like a lot of the stuff, it's kind of interesting to figure out, like, okay, is this supposed to actually have been a thing he did, or did he just get like stuck in his head and this whole thing is a very meta? Because when the Lost Man is doom scrolling on his phone, you actually see a bunch of the stuff that is later in the nightmare anomalies.
I remember distinctly seeing the rat with the ear on it.
Yeah, you see the rat. There's another thing where there's like a picture of a stuff with the lights on top being all kind of weirded out.
That one they don't focus on too. That one is as he's before, I think he understands the rules. Because I remember seeing that and not understanding what it was, but it was like, that was that normal? That doesn't seem normal.
And that's the thing I think they did a really good job at in this is then it was very, I read a couple interview things or whatever, and like it was very intentional there that they wanted to be a little bit interactive. And my wife and I, having played the game, were sitting there as he's going through and like, we're watching, we're like, no, that's an anomaly. That's an anomaly. Turn around. And like, doesn't turn around or he doesn't see it. We're like, no, we see it. Which I think is kind of a fun, intentionally fun thing that they have in there if you've seen it. But then as well, I think for those of you that didn't, like you, I think they did a really good job at having you learn the rules of the, I'll call it the game, at the same time as the lost mm-hmm. man is learning them.
So another question I have, since again, I didn't see it in any of the Let's Plays I watched, but again, maybe you've experienced it, Dylan. So in the segment with the walking man, at the end of his segment, he sees what we now know as the fake exit 8. I don't remember that being a thing in the game either. Like, I don't think you ever actually see exit 8 until it's actually exit 8.
I've never seen a fake exit. I definitely would have gone. So that's my... I definitely would have gone for it.
So yeah, right. So I guess that's my first question: was that actually a fake exit 8, or was that actually his exit 8?
I think it was fake.
Yeah, I would agree too. And
because the kid is, I don't know, the kid seems like he's always right.
Yeah, the kid,
to me, is the
lesson we learn is that the child right is the most like level-headed and observant of the characters that are focused on. I agree. I definitely think it's. I just thought it was an interesting angle they took, because from what I also remember, the exit 8 he took looks like the successful exit 8 of the game.
Yeah, it's
in the game. Oh. Is it up like
yep.
that?
Yeah,
yep. You finally walk out.
It's a wide stairwell that goes upward. Mm-hmm. Because that was the thing at the very end that had me questioning. I was like, wait, he's going down lower. What the heck? I was thinking like, whoa, this is different. And that was another cool kind of, you know, like mess with the audience if they've played the game, is like people are like, whoa, wait, he's going down further. Is that's not right? And so I thought that was a really interesting kind of curveball. At the end there, and then it kind of looping back on itself. And so yeah,
it
like
it was nice that they left it kind of open-ended, though. Like, it's not settled that the walking man didn't make it out, but you just kind of you infer that he didn't. And I, you know, I like that it wasn't so, not like they didn't show him like burning up or dying or anything. He just like he leaves, and you just kind of have to assume that he didn't really make it out.
Because he's still present in the thing, which is interesting.
I took it as that he went like there and got taken as part of the machine, and because then like after that the kid sees him and like tries to point to him, but then Lost Man says like, oh, that guy's not even like a human anymore. So that's what I was taking, that he was absorbed by the subway.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that, but I don't think it's my interpretation is that it wasn't just an arbitrarily he was chosen. Like I interpret getting stuck in the space as, you know, because there was that segment with when the walking man interacts with the schoolgirl, which is his walking man in his version of the space, right? And she starts mm-hmm. to talk to him, and you know, it starts to say talk about like, oh, is this hell? Is this purgatory? Like, you know, it's starting to kind of throw ideas around, like of why, how people end up in the space and why they can't leave. And I'm of the opinion that the walking man, because you never see what the walking man's baggage is, right? Like you mm-hmm. see with the baggage for the lost man, and it's inferred, and the little boy is kind of like, he kind of just, oh, I just wanted to run away, you know. And so, but they never really understand why the walking man is in the space. But for me, him taking that fake exit 8 is him embracing being in the space forever, because maybe he doesn't want to deal with his baggage and would rather just be, you know.
Well, so that brings me to an interesting question / theory that I had, is that he does mention that when he gets really frustrated, he's like, I'm supposed to meet my son for the first time today. And that got me thinking, like, what if that is the walking man is the lost man if he makes a different choice? If he makes the choice to abandon his child, right, and let the mother raise it on his own, his future is the walking man.
Huh.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Because, so, I mean, the son, they make pretty, the kid, they make pretty clear is the son
right.
of the lost man. And so that comment made me think that, like, oh, maybe this guy is actually, yeah, if this, like, represents a different path that he could have taken.
That could be.
And so maybe this is his, like, baggage is, I don't know, maybe guilt from having made the wrong choice, or, you know, a different choice in the earlier, and trying to decide if he even actually wants to meet his son.
It does seem like the walking man really can't listen to the kid. Like,
oh, yeah, I was gonna,
even when he tries, he just charges on.
Oh,
that's true. And the kid never says anything to him either. Mm-hmm.
He stays completely silent until probably his last few scenes with the lost man.
Yeah.
The lost man, yeah.
That's a good point. Huh. Okay.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting.
I wanna go off another thing that I thought was kind of interesting, which was just in the whole setup of it, was the lost man gets in there and all of a sudden he gets Groundhog Day, and it's kind of interesting because it's like, oh, when you're playing the game, like, you can stop and just be like, oh gosh, I'm just like, I'm so frustrated, I just have to stop. I know he did that so many times. Because you get up to 5 or 6 and then, nope, you missed it. It's back down to 0 again.
Yeah.
But with the lost man, I thought it was pretty interesting that they gave like 2, and this is one of the things I actually think was a cool setup, but then I feel like they kind of dropped a little bit, was they, at the beginning, like once he gets in there, it's actually kind of cool because they give like really this timer, which is he just had like this little end of a bottle of water, and then he has this like asthma thing.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm like,
that's the other thing I found interesting was like at the very beginning, they really were leaning into the, yeah, he has asthma, because like he was wheezing and coughing a ton in the first, I don't know, 20 minutes. I actually was, it was incredibly grating for me because just his wheezing was,
oh man, it was
at a frequency that was just like, it really is maddening for me. And then eventually, I think it was when he had his like big outburst of frustration, that's when he kind of stopped having those episodes. But, and I think that was a very intentional choice. In the film to have it be that way, because he loses all his backpack, you know, relatively early in, like once that first time he makes it to like what, exit 5, and then gets looped back and has his fit of rage
breakdown,
yeah,
which man, that was great too, very relatable, like
saying,
like,
for sure,
you playing the game, you can quit any time, but he's just like, he has to keep going. And that's like, the frustration was just palpable of like, come on.
And
I cannot believe this.
I love that it was, at least as far as I could tell, he fell for the same anomaly multiple times and never caught it, which was on the other side of the exit. The times where it says turn back, turn back, turn back. Like he never he always fell for that one. He never once actually looked back to glance at the sign when it was wrong, because he's looked at it plenty of times when it was right, and it would just say courtyard or whatever up top. But those times where it said turn back, even when the little boy, right, was looking at it but didn't, you know, point it out, he still went his way. And like I found that relatable, because, you know, I'm sure people that played the game, there's probably anomalies that they never really spotted, and they kept getting caught by, or they just dumb lucked and said, something doesn't feel right, and turned around and guessed right. Because ultimately, mathematically, you can theoretically get, it's a 50-50, right? Like, you either go forward or go backwards. So mathematically, you can, you know, guess every single time and eventually get, I don't know what the probability of that is. I'll let somebody else do that. But, I did find it cool, funny that he did solve it, but he never perfected it, right? Like he never actually understood what every anomaly was. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, Dylan, did you have something else to say there?
The probability of picking the right side of a coin flip 10 times in a row is like 1 in 10, 24.
Isn't it 9 times? Because 0 through 8.
Oh, right. Not 10 times. Derp. So you got a good chance. You could just keep trying and eventually, like...
Just run.
Yeah, just... And so, honestly, sometimes that's what I did. I just be like, I'm just going. I'm just going to go, and maybe I'll just get it right. And I would never get it right. but it was interesting, too, like, watching the movie, and then I went and played the game later, and there was, when I was playing the game before the movie, I never spotted the door handle in the middle of the door.
I wonder if that was intentionally done in the movie because, like, the game developer probably, if they do have metrics, they could probably say, oh, statistically, that's the one that most people fail at or something.
And, like,
I wonder if that's
that was one that I missed, like, all the time. Then I went and, like, after watching the movie, I played again. I was like, I saw you this time. which is kind of cool because, yeah, like, everybody has blind spots and things that, like, they don't see in the game. And I think that the more I'm hearing this discussion here, it's kind of interesting because it's like all these things feel very intentional, like the one where, like, he never spots the hikikaise, the turn back on the, you know, it's like, oh, huh, that's kind of interesting that he never spots that. There are some of the ones where, like, you'll walk in and, like, you see one of the side doors open, and that's just like, oh gosh, it's so unnerving. You're like, oh my gosh, turn around, go back, immediately go back. Something's horrible there. Do not proceed. But in the movie, it's, you know, I think it's done very well when he's like, what's through here?
I thought the movie adapted the door creaking open really well. I thought that was a cool way to turn that from a really creepy moment in the game into, like, another kind of, like, plot development opportunity for the Lost Man. I thought that was a really excellently done segment.
Did anybody go back and check to see if, when he's on the train, you can see him through the train window?
I did not.
I watched it again and I did not see that, but I don't remember if I was particularly looking for that, but I didn't see if you could, like, see, because I think you can see him looking at himself in his reflection a little bit, but I don't think you can really see out to see there. But yeah, I agree. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, I did like that moment, that kind of, I don't know, it was very contemplative, I guess. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but it gave a very unsettling feeling of him watching himself there. Just very, very weird.
And I think it's pretty interesting, too, where it's like, oh, he's watching himself react in a way that he's not, you know, necessarily proud of by just putting his headphones back in and having the crazy salary man go and sit there and keep screaming at the woman with the baby.
Yeah. It's like it's forcing him to think about his actions or something, or to reflect on himself some.
Yeah.
And that can be, like, I don't know, if I want to stick my head way up my ass, it could be kind of just a thing that he needs to be doing is reconsidering his choices or putting more thought into how he acts and think about others, something like that. I don't know.
Well, now you have me thinking of the whole thing as a metaphor of discovering his blind spots to make progress.
Oh.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, actually, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I like that.
Wow, that's...
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
And that, like, to me, that's what elevates this movie from just being a simple game adaptation of... The game has an interesting idea in it. And most game movies are really bad because they're just like, I don't know.
Be the plot of the game.
Show all the things people want to see in the movie. Just like, right. And this is like, it uses the content of the game, the like main subject of the, you know, kind of the puzzles. I mean, it helps that there's no real plot in the original game too, but like it really does something good with it. I won't go as far to say it's profound, but it's very thoughtful in that I came out of that theater and I was like, I was thinking about so much stuff. Like, what could that mean? Like, what about this thing? Why that? And like, you know, that's kind of why I was like trying to find.
I'm jealous you got to catch it in a theater.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That's why I check your local theater listings, people. They have all kinds of crazy stuff all the time. Foreign films. But yeah, it was just such a good job in making its own thing out of it instead of just being a game adaptation.
Yeah, I liked that they didn't invent crazy amounts of lore to lore dump.
Yes.
Because that's one place video game adaptations fail, is they try and make up too much that doesn't match the game.
Yeah.
Or they have to go for some like crazy exposition about every single historical thing in the game universe ever to check all the boxes.
Yeah.
Right.
But it is interesting that it holds together and there's characters and they're very distinct, and unless I'm crazy, none of the characters in the movie have a name.
No, they are. All their names are descriptions.
Yeah.
Yeah, even his ex-girlfriend is just a photo on his phone, not a contact name.
Oh yeah, was there a name there? Oh, yeah. I forget. I didn't
catch one.
There was just a
photo of her and the cat.
I forget. I think there was some text, but I don't think it was a name. It was like a nickname or something.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think anybody has a name. And I mean, at that point, I just have to assume, you know, they really tried really hard to make sure nobody had a name.
Yeah.
Which I guess I wonder why, but
I think my take on that is that it was the director's attempt at making people want to project or see themselves within these characters.
Hmm.
Because if they remain, they're being portrayed by people, but if they remain nameless, maybe it'll be like, you know, people will start to, maybe he wants people to fill in the gaps. And so I was like, oh, actually, you know what? This guy totally reminds me of my brother. And I totally can see him being this way in this situation. Or,
like, they
exist
more as an abstraction than than an actual person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, exactly.
And maybe that's why they're stuck in there, too, is that whole abstraction thing, so therefore they are nameless while they're stuck in this space. I don't know.
So kind of like the you're in this a liminal space, which itself is not really a place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the place didn't have a name, as far as we know. It was just like the corridor between the concourse and exit 8.
Mm. Maybe it's like when you're in there, you lose yourself, kind of a thing.
Yeah, I don't know. So, I could be very much overthinking this or just pulling it out of my butt, but...
that's what's fun about it.
I think that was, again, intentional by the director and the production team, is to elicit conversations like this about the film, which I think is perfectly fine and very cool. Like, I do agree, Sam, it's so rare to come out from a film and really just... Have it not fill in enough gaps that you want to try to fill them in, versus feeling like, oh, that movie sucked. It totally didn't explain anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, because I'm sure there have been plenty of movies like that where it's just like, yeah, the writing, they left so many completely open, like loose ends that were not settled, and it felt unsatisfying. Where I definitely was very satisfied at the end of the movie. I'm like, wow, that's that was, and the ending especially, because I love that initially, you know, the second final seconds leading up to the credits, I'm questioning like, oh, is it just gonna cut to black without him making a decision or a change? And then you see him in the last 1.5 seconds turn and start walking, and you're like, ah, he's gonna do it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, mm-hmm. it cuts the credits. I was like, oh, very cool. So,
which also, by the way, like, those end credits were fantastic.
Yeah, I mean it's rare for me to be like enamored with end credits. Usually they're just credits, but it reminded me almost like a credit roll from like a Koike movie or something. Like, it was really it was visually cool. Like, just it looked cool. And yeah, it kind of had Koike style. Simple but very elegantly chosen graphical design elements.
Yeah. Yeah, like the credits themselves were entertaining. It's like even more than like the end of like a Pixar movie, or I think Disney movies even do this, the animated ones, where there's like some kind of animation for the around the credits, but there's still just kind of a normal credit roll with like illustrations around it. This was like the credits themselves were just interesting, and like I was kind of watching closely to see what they were turning into as they were animating and stuff. And
yeah, or is there something hidden within it that you might catch?
Yeah.
Like, it's like a mini game of sorts.
Yes. So it's really nice touch. Like, I came out of the movie, with all these thoughts in my head. The one, I guess, maybe complaint I had was that it was very video gamey for obvious reasons. You know, like, okay, here are the rules. You find the anomaly, then you go forward or you go back, right? But in the end, I had that feeling while I was watching the movie, but by the end of it, it didn't really matter. I think the movie really transcended that whole game-ish nature of it. That, like, just to, that I didn't care about that anymore. It didn't feel cheesy. It just felt like it, I don't know, a part of the story, and I didn't think about it anymore.
Yeah, I know it's not going to be possible with all video games, so I really hope that, because I don't know how much this movie costs, but just based off Wikipedia, it looks like it earned $44 million, which seems like a pretty solid amount for a Japanese film, especially, and one that had such a limited international run. But I really hope that other directors and other producers will maybe consider, instead of trying to literally retell a video game in a movie, find a video game with an interesting concept, use that as a set piece, but then tell your own story around the concept. Mm-hmm. Because that's what they did with Exit, and I think it turned out wonderfully. And again, I think it's perfect how we all experience it, because like Dylan said, each of us had a different level of exposure to the game. Mm-hmm. Dylan having played it before, me being familiar with it and watched it before, you, Sam, knowing it existed but didn't actually know if it was actually inspired the movie or it came after the movie, and then Mike, who did not see anything of the game at all before or after, yet we all still definitely got something from the movie, which I think, again, is a sign that it definitely succeeded. So I really hope more people try something like this, because I feel like there's so many cool games that they can do this with, not just necessarily like, you know, first person like escape or horror, but actual, like, mm-hmm. you know, games, like, you know, not something that's super, not like a Final Fantasy or something that's
right,
that's,
not yeah. something that has a its own plot, right? Like something that's
and established really characters, yeah, and
yeah,
but
yeah,
more, it's more about a really interesting a setting and a concept, and then build it off of that.
Yeah, like, I want to, I guess this is maybe a good time to do a little spoiler free contrasting with Backrooms, which I guess just me and Mike have seen.
Yeah, I have not seen it. I know of it, and I've heard interesting things about it. I've seen random clips from it, and yeah, that's about it.
budget for Exit 8, I can't cite sources right now, but Gemini AI is telling me is around 2 million in the 300 to 400 million yen range, so...
Then it was a
right.
Astronomical success if it made 44 US million USD. I mean, that's a massive, massive return on investment. So
yeah. That feels like a, I don't know, it feels like a low, reasonable budget. When you think about it, you're like, okay, yeah, like that seems like a believable budget. Than that,
but yeah, I'd say definitely 5 million seems reasonable.
Well, apparently, I mean, you have to translate to Japanese scale budgets where 2 million is considered normal, like a mid-range, apparently, as opposed to here where it'd be like a super indie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I guess that's true. I'm just thinking, like, they built the set was very small. And, you know, they ran out some time on a train and a subway station for a couple of shots, and then... Then it's just actors, and you've got, like, what, 5 actors? And they have very few lines, so yeah, I guess
it's... Yeah, it feels like the set building is the main thing that takes it above the scale of, say, Obsession, which managed to get done in L.A. on 750,000, so it's doable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. So I did want to contrast a little bit with Backrooms, and I just wanted to say that, like, I like this movie more than Backrooms. Mm-hmm. It was this Backrooms, I feel like, was a bit too try hard in being weird and spooky, and they tried to hint at lore that I don't think they paid out enough for what they hinted at, like, if that makes any sense. Do you know what does that make sense, Mike? Do you buy that?
It
or
kind of makes sense, yeah. I'm not really familiar with the overall Backrooms lore before the movie, because I know there are some conflicts there, or at least he's got his version and other people have theirs.
I mean, I just take the movie as its own thing and ignore any other stuff, but it felt like they tried to, the movie is about the mystery and solving the mystery almost, whereas Exit 8 is not about solving the mystery per se, but the character's journey through the mystery.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Though it's interesting, the like psychological effects, and that they're both kind of trapped in the space by, you know, their own personality things that they're dealing with. But
mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
But that's a very broad stroke. Obviously, the fine details are quite different. Though the liminal creepiness is similar.
Yes. And I feel like they... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, and just on a thing there, if you're not familiar, I kind of knew, but I had to look it up. Like, the liminal means, like, basically, like, in between spaces. So it can be, like, a corridor that's joining something, but it's not, like, the main place. It's like a hallway, and here it's all these. So there's a lot of this stuff with all those things these days.
I will even say, to bring it ammo, like, it is the unfamiliar ceiling feeling almost.
Mm. Oh man, nice, love it, love it. Mishiro no Tenju. Can I go back in here a little bit? I tried to grab a pick, and they changed one of the posters. They changed was in the original game. There was a fairly simple blue, like, part time employment, like, ad, and then the new one, they changed it to, like, this, like, weird, like, then the subtitle, they call it, like,
the maid, like, the maid one.
Yeah, they call it, like, a high paying, like, thing, like, oh, okay, I see what it is now. I'm looking at my picture of it again, because, like, I had trouble figuring out, because, like, all I saw was, like, this, like, big sign that just said, like, Ichigo Miruku, like, strawberry milk. But looking at the actual poster, it is an advertisement for what they call as, like, a high-paying part-time work. And the place is called, literally, that strawberry milk. And it's labeled as a concept cafe.
Yeah, so it's part-time. It's part-time work at a maid cafe.
Yes.
And then you can see it's 2,000 yen.
Yeah.
Starting. Which is quite good. Yes. Yeah, which is very, very good in Japan, for sure, for starting wage. I want to say like 700 to 800 yen an hour is more of a normal, like starting, like low wage. So 2,000 is like considered quite good.
Okay, so I was trying to look and clarify that for myself, because I felt like it ended up being like a little bit weird in the subtitle way there. It was definitely, I watched the first time with subs, and the second time I didn't watch the subs. Like, my Japanese is fine, but it's also a movie that, like, honestly, I feel like you could probably, for the most part, like 95% of the movie, you could watch without subtitles, without knowing Japanese, and still understand everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Minus the conversations with the ex-girlfriend.
Right. That's the part, like, that I would say. That's like the 5% or whatever that's like, okay, those
that
ones.
And that nuance does matter, right?
It does.
But at the same time, I don't disagree, because honestly, I thought what was interesting to me was, because I just kept the subtitles on because I was too lazy to turn them off. But the movie itself, like, there's lots of parts where he's kind of just whispering to himself. And at least as far as I'm concerned, you weren't necessarily intended to hear what he's saying exactly. He's just kind of, you know, muttering to himself, where, you know, and obviously with the subtitles, you see it, but it's just like, yeah, I don't know if I needed to know that, because again, he's clearly not speaking loud enough to be heard.
That's always a weird thing with subtitles, is like the mutterings and utterances, because with our existing way that subtitles gets rendered, like, there's no real way to, like, I mean, there's probably is a way, but they don't do it, of like rendering, like, other than just literally subtitling it as like unintelligible muttering, like, but nobody puts that. I know it's kind of a complete aside thing, but it is always one of those weird things, yeah, with the unintelligible mutterings where you're like, huh. And sometimes things like make more or less sense. Like, in one of the times where he's going through, like, he actually says the posters in like the wrong order. He says like the clinic, he says like the part-time work and then the clinic, and he says them like out of order, which is fine, because that's how an actual like person would do it. Is sometimes you're just like, you've gone through this so many times and you're like, oh, what is happening here? Like, it's just, yes, this and that. Okay, great. Even though the posters were in the correct order.
Guys, don't search for Ichigo Milk Cafe.
Safe search on.
It's a real place. But it's, well, you can guess.
NSFW cafe.
Yeah.
Which is probably why it's paying so much.
Yeah.
Also a good point. That's some of the better paying work for young ladies in Japan with no other skills, for sure. So
I think I felt like my least favorite thing, and the part that I didn't quite get, was like the kid in the movie. But I think with this discussion here, I actually have a much better appreciation of the kid and like why he wasn't ever talking. My other thought that I had on him was like, okay, well, why is the kid there and like why can't he get out? And I had the thought, I was like, oh, like the kid can see the stuff, but he can't get out on his own. Like, he needs the help of an adult here, and in this case, like a parent, a father, to get him out of this mess and help him to get through. That was my philosophical application on the
channel. I actually think it's the exact opposite. I think the lost man needed the kid to actually get out, like get through the last hump, because he was like in the movie, he's able to get to exit 5 on his own, but that's the highest he gets to before he crosses paths with the kid. And then the kid, I mean, there was that one very poignant moment where he's walking, and I believe it's one of the first times the kid spoke, and he goes, the eight's upside down. And the guy's like, oh, you're right. And that was it's such a tiny thing, right? Like, I didn't even know that was one of the things. It's so hard to tell because the eight, you know, the two loops of the eight are such so similar in size. I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. And I'm like, huh. And so I think that the kid was put there, one, as kind of like a metaphor for like what this guy really wants in life. And his way out, his way to salvation was embracing being a father, because he actually will be a good, because, you know, it's revealed that in the dialogue with the kid, he grew up without a dad. And I think for a lot of men who grow up without fathers, that one of their biggest fears is becoming a father themselves, because they don't have a role model to base it off of. So I think that, again, this is me, like, again, filling in a lot of gaps with my own imagination, but I think it's the kid was inserted to kind of be his side, the guide to being like, it's okay, like, you can make it out, I'll help, and it kind of had him, because, you know, he at the end, he air quotes sacrificed himself to make sure that the kid is safe, right, from the rising floodwaters. That was that last part was a little weird, where, like, they got separated and the kid goes off on his own, and then he suddenly just gets up and, you know, stumbles his way to the exit without him. But aside from that,
it's kind of like, I don't know, everybody who goes in there, it's like goes in there to learn something about themselves. And, you know, I think you kind of said this, that the kid needs to, the thing the kid needs to understand as being like a runaway is that he needs to trust adults, that they are, that not everybody is, you know, they're not all bad, right? And he needed to trust the lost man in order to finally find his way out.
And I noticed he started trusting the lost man when the lost man started actually paying attention to him and what he was saying.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Whereas the walking man never really did.
Well, the walking man, I think, was taking the position of, well, I'm the adult, I should be the leader and the father figure, right? Like a very traditional, let's call it, like, you know, Japanese male, like, expectation. And he was trying to execute on it, even though at times he was kind of getting angry, frustrated, and then he'd be like, oh, and then he'd smile and say, oh, I'm sorry, that was mean of me, let's get going. Like, it wasn't him being like, hey, I'll listen to what's going on, more just, hey, I'm sorry about that, let's keep going, even, and still basically not correct the error in the first place, which was he was not listening to the kid, even though the kid wasn't speaking. Like, the kid was trying to let him know something is wrong, but he wasn't paying attention to the kid's tells.
Including up to him trying to drag the kid up to the wrong exit.
The fake exit eight.
Yeah. And the kid's literally holding on to him and trying to pull him back. And he's like, no.
Right. He's trying to save the walking man. And he will not listen. So I think we're pretty much coming to the end here. So I figure we'll go around one more time and see if you guys have any final thoughts about this cool movie. Mike, I'll be start with you.
I'm definitely liking a trend back toward showing more than telling and leaving a lot of the lore out for the viewers to guess and debate themselves, because we've certainly had a good time with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't all agree about everything, too, which is, I love that, too. Dylan, what about you?
I think it was just a really lovely shot and framed movie, and so many long cuts and sequences and things in there that I think took a lot of careful planning and setup to execute and were done really well. As the director said, they definitely wanted the hallway, I'll call it, or the corridor, to be a character in the movie just as much as the hotel is in The Shining. And I think they did an excellent job and accomplished that as well, because the corridor definitely has a personality to it as well.
Yeah, definitely. Nick, how about you?
Yeah, really, really great movie. Probably might be my favorite video game adaptation of a movie ever, which is saying quite a lot. I mean, to be fair, that's not a high bar to cross there. That's not been something that's been done well. But I will say, Going back to the topic I was talking about earlier, where, you know, it would be cool to see more games adapted in this way, I think the perfect candidate game, and I almost feel like it's a game that was built to have this done, that technically never became a game, would be P.T.
Oh, yeah.
If Guillermo del Toro just decided, you know what, I'll just turn this into a movie instead, and did it in this fashion. First of all, I don't know if I could watch it because I might just die of a heart attack. I don't know if any of you ever played PT, but it is one of the most legitimately terrifying experiences I've ever encountered.
Well, there's that new game coming out, so...
That was an experimental thing that Del Toro and Kojima did as something?
It was a really cool game trailer reveal concept, or it was supposed to be the next Silent Hill.
That's right.
Starring Norman Reedus, because Norman Reedus was supposed to be the main character. And then Konami basically could not... That was when Konami Konami'd themselves forever. And basically burnt every last bridge and piece of goodwill with their fan base, because that's what drove Kojima away from Konami. Reedus was only in the project because of Kojima. And that's why, famously, after Kojima split from Konami, he made his own studio and then started work on Death Stranding, which Norman Reedus then jumped in on right away. And then Del Toro is basically like, man, F video games. I'm done with trying to do video games, and F Konami. But man, it was... I highly recommend that you guys at least watch like a playthrough of it, just because it is... does the whole liminal space thing, you know, looping liminal space thing really well. It's got... It just oozes setting and is absolutely terrifying so I really would be interested to see Del Toro especially adapt it into a movie. I think he would do, and you know, with a proper budget, I think the set would be phenomenal. But again, I don't expect it to happen because Konami holds the rights, I believe, so that's probably never going to happen.
And I do remember reading a thing saying the original creator of that was one of their other like inspired things was that game experience thing, whatever you want to call it, as well.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I think PT really did spawn the trend of these infinite looping liminal space games, because it kind of was the first one to become viral. I won't say it was the first one ever, but it was the first one to become... I mean, that came out, gosh, PS4, I was still...
2014.
Up the Central Coast, so, yeah, like 12 years ago. So,
jeez.
But yeah, going back to Exit 8, awesome, awesome movie. Highly recommend it for anybody, even if you've watched it, played the game or not.
Yeah. Cool. My final thing I wanted to mention that I'd forgotten about was the music by Yasutaka Nakata, who is one half of the group Capsule, and also like probably the best music producer that Japan has in terms of like poppy music. If you've heard some really good music by some pop star or whatever, it's very catchy, he's probably behind it. Very talented music producer. Cool. Well, that does it for us and our discussion of Exit 8. We don't know yet what we're doing next time, but look forward to it. Until then, this is AMO Kenzoku saying, Saraba.